Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Next Level Pet people will do anything for their dogs. That means treating them with next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus, a Foxalaner Moxidectin and Parental Chewable Tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms, all in a tasty beef flavored chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, it is time for another edition of the Hard Shoulders Bookshelf. So last week, the former RTE newsreader Eileen Dunn placed An Evil Cradling by Brian Keenan up on the bookshelf. And this week gives me great, great pleasure to welcome to studio Michael McDool, whose book I have in my hand, his new book, The Definitive Article, Collected Writings of Michael McDool. Now, just, I mean, for the sake of humility, that's not the book you're putting on the bookshelf, is it, Michael?
It is.
This is your own book, and it is this Thursday it's going to be available?
Yep.
This Thursday, and I know there's special signing in Hodges Figgis on Dawson Street on Saturday as well at 11 for those interested. Now, I was lucky enough, I was telling you, to get a little sneak preview, and for people who religiously read you in the Irish Times, there's more to it than that. There's Irish Times articles, but there's plenty more besides.
Well, yeah, I mean, when, as I say in the preface to the book, this was not my idea. I had promised the publishers a different book on the Anglo-Irish Treaty, and I kept falling behind on my deadlines. And eventually Michael Brennan, their very kind and decent representative, said, "Can I have a coffee with you, Michael?" And I said, "Sure." And I thought he was going to read me the riot act. And he said, "Well, while you're getting on with the book, what would you think of us publishing collected writings by you?" And I said, "Fine, if you think there's a market for that, I'd be very glad to do it." So it was his idea and not mine. I just want to stress that.
And did you curate it? Did you decide what went in or how much input was there, external input?
No, the publishers chose virtually everything in it. I took out a few which I thought were dated and too topical at the time. People wouldn't recognise a reference to politics 7 years ago, or the issue would have been determined a long time ago. And I put in a few historical things, papers that I'd written, which I considered of importance, like articles on Irish unity, Irish history, Roger Casement's trial, things like that.
Yeah, so I like I say, there's lots of people I know who do read the column religiously and have done for the last 15 years or so. But I was reading last night a speech you gave at the commemoration of the Ulster Covenant back in 2012 in the Linen Hall in Belfast, and a speech you gave at the NUI McNeil seminar as well, kind of more recently than that. So there's lots of stuff in there, and it's available from Thursday, the definite article, Collected Writings of Michael McDool. And that brings us on to, I guess, the reason we're here, which is our own bookshelf. So what's your favourite book? What book are you going to place up on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf?
I have a lot of favourite books.
It's a hard one, yeah.
But one of them is Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, which I'm very fond of. Another of them is the Wolf of Wolf Hall series. And another one is a poetry book by Robert Frost, which I was very fond of his poetry. And I had an uncle who was very, very friendly with him, the famous American poet.
Yeah.
And he sent me a copy of books, especially inscribed to me, encouraging me to be a poet.
Wow.
At the age of 9.
Have you still got them?
Oh, I still have, yeah.
Wow. So you have a Robert Frost collection signed by Robert Frost with a message to you to
pursue poetry. Yeah.
That's incredible.
And just as in the Frost poem, I took the road less travelled by. I took the non-poetic road.
Yeah, you did, yeah. And knowing how way leads on to way, I doubt you'll ever go back at this stage, yeah. Michael. What do you like about Robert Frost's poetry?
I like his use of language. I like his use of images. And one of the things that I was impressed by, in particular by Robert Frost's poetry, is that you can divine his meaning at a number of levels, but you can always understand what he's writing. Mm. There aren't obscure references that you have to dig open with a crowbar or specialist knowledge. And there's it also appeals, I think, to the ordinary person who loves English and who can admire his use of... He's a great practitioner of wordsmithery and rhyme in particular.
Yeah, and I guess evidence of that are things like, you know, stopping by woods in a snowy evening. Yeah. There's lots of people who say, I have miles to go before I sleep, and they won't necessarily know where it's from.
Exactly, yeah.
And
the explanation that was offered for that was simply that here was an incident in his mind based on his New England upbringing and experience where just he and his horse stopped outside a wood, and he just was reflecting on the woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep.
Despite, you know, how straightforward the language is, what I find remarkable about Robert Frost's poetry, or one poem in particular, is how often you hear Mendingwall quote it in the wrong context.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's amazing how many people will cite it as an example of constructing barriers.
Yeah, well, people love his poetry, and like all great poetry, it then gets used for a variety of purposes.
Yeah.
I mean, Seamus Heaney, our own Robert Frost, if you like, because there are huge similarities between them. Seamus Heaney's poetry is quoted this way and that, for good and for ill, and sometimes misunderstanding his meaning.
And in what way do you suggest there's a big overlap between Heaney's poetry and Frost's?
Well, again, it's the use of language. You know, I mean, when he's talking about cutting turf or building scaffolding or whatever.
The poetry of ordinary, the language of ordinary people.
Exactly. You don't have to work out, you know, knowledge of the Latin classics, what he's driving at.
So that's a very worthy choice, and it hasn't been mentioned by anyone else, that collected poems by Robert Frost. Certainly not an edition that's signed by Robert Frost with a personal message. The Lord of the Rings, would you be interested to know two other people in this lot have mentioned the Lord of the Rings?
Tell me who.
Two politicians.
Yeah.
One person picked it as their favourite book, and one person gave it an honourable mention.
Yeah.
Hazel Chew picked it as her favourite book, and Richard Boyd Barrett gave it honourable mention.
Well, that's good, because I mean, it has a universal appeal. You know, kids started off with The Hobbit, which was J.R.R. Tolkien's first work. But what people didn't understand about him was that while he was writing this fairy tale, effectively, for children, there was, at the back of it all, this linguistics expert who had a whole world in his mind, who'd constructed elven languages, who'd written texts in elvish, who was able to construct a whole world of mythology too, of different clashing civilizations. And at the heart of it, I think this probably appealed to Hazel and indeed to
Richard.
That I think at the heart of it, there is a sense of morality, that there is good and bad, that there is evil, and that the good side is not necessarily, massive heroism. It's banal, small people doing the right thing.
Yeah. It's I didn't know this myself when I read it as a youngster either, but apparently Tolkien was one of these people who really kind of bought into the idea of the Norman yoke, you know, and lamented the 1066 and everything thereafter. And this was part of his attempt to create a kind of an English folkloric history that had been wiped out.
He rigidly rejected the historical parallels, which were, I would say, some of them occurred to me. When you talk about the great clash of Stalinism, Hitlerism, and Western liberalism, in the 1930s when he was forming most of his ideas, it's very hard not to see significant similes between his thought process and those. But he said it wasn't about that, and he rigidly stuck to the proposition that this was a new folklore which he had developed and had different themes in it.
So what, you mentioned Wolf Hall actually as well, amongst the books that you're a big fan of. I wonder, before we talk about the book, did you watch the TV show with Mark Rylance?
And in fact, I'm a bit of a cheat on that because I sort of crossed between the two.
Oh, did you?
I was a bit inclined to skip chapters.
Well, I just thought, wasn't the last half hour of that TV show one of the best pieces of television you'd ever see? And almost nothing happened in it. It was just Thomas Cromwell's character locked up, being interviewed intermittently. Almost nothing happened. And it was just mesmerizing.
Well, I mean, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. I mean, he was living in, I mean, Henry VIII's world was an extraordinary one, where a sideways look from the monarch and your head was on the block for whatever reason, and where people could, by torturing evidence out of other people, implicate people, and there was no answer to it. If the king wanted you dead, you were killed. And the funny thing about Cromwell is this kind of, as Hilary Mantel says, portrays it, his almost phlegmatic acceptance. I can see where this is ending up.
Yeah. I think that's what I loved about the trilogy as well. It's how evocative it is of that world. Paints an incredible picture of the world he lived in, of everything about it.
But there's a lesson in it for us today. I would say, that arbitrariness, whether it's Putin, whether it's President Xi, whether it's the emerging tyranny, intellectual tyranny of Trump, or whether it's North Korea, arbitrariness is something which we thought we'd said goodbye to 70 years ago, and it's back again.
What book are you reading at the moment?
Well, one of the books I'm reading at the moment is a book by an American professor who's now dead, on Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR. And it's a really, really good book. It's a guy who died in 2014, James McGregor Byrne, and he was a Pulitzer Prize winner, and he wrote a magnificent book on Roosevelt. And I mean, although Roosevelt and Trump are radically different people, and Roosevelt sort of kick-started America through the Fair Deal and guided America through the Depression and the Civil War, Second World War and the like. The story that you have to draw from it all is not that, Roosevelt was a perfect person, and he's not portrayed as that in this book. He was a total pragmatist. And he was a political survivor, and he knew how to, I'm not going to say manipulate, but to guide American public opinion in his direction. But going to, the circumstances that existed right up to Pearl Harbor in December 1941, America was intent on staying out of that war.
Yeah.
And he was surrounded by people who regarded him as fundamentally unreliable, that he hankered after participation in the war. And he was sympathetic towards saving the liberal free world. But the American isolationist tendency is back again. You look what's happening in, trying to grab Greenland, trying to grab Panama, trying to grab Canada and the Panama Canal. I mean, what is going on? We live in a very, very strange world, and if you don't study American history, some of it is a bit difficult to follow. But FDR and Donald Trump are very, very different people. But you really have to understand one to understand where the other is coming from.
It is called The Definitive FDR by James McGregor Burns, as you say, who's passed away, but Pulitzer Prize winning author and journalist. But I think up on the Hard Shoulder Bookshelf, the collected poems of Robert Frost with a signature and a bespoke message as well. Michael, thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thanks very much, Kieran, for having me.
The publication of this, is this timed so to launch the presidential campaign now, is it?
No, it has no significance. It's well overdue, and I'm happy with it. I think people will enjoy reading bits of it. You don't have to read it all from cover to cover, but people will enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it.
So you'll be launching the campaign then another day?
No.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.